Harper Audio presents The Making of a Dream, how a group of young undocumented immigrants helped change what it means to be American, by Laura Wides Munoz, read by Almarie Guerra. Chapter 1. In the Beginning. It would only be a few weeks. That's what Jerez Andrade Ayala's parents told her when they planned the trip to Washington, D.C. 8-year-old Jerez and her little sister would travel from La Paz, Bolivia, with their grandmother and grandfather. Their parents would join the girls later. Jerez's grandparents had lived with the family as long as she could remember, always game for her bits of theater, jokes, and dances. All the stuff her parents were too tired to sit through. She traveled to visit relatives with them before. This would be another one of those adventures. The night before they left, Jerez's mother tucked her elder daughter's favorite books into the suitcase. Betty Ayala had bought the books on layaway with money from her accountant work at City Hall. One book was filled with jokes. Another with tongue twisters. The last book was titled, Why Is This So? Betty paused on that one. ¿Por qué es así? Was one of Jerez's favorite phrases. Already it was tough for Betty to answer all her daughter's questions. Her own mind twirled around the biggest whys. Why leave? Why risk everything? Jerez's father, Mario Andrade, had a few classes left before he finished his architecture degree at the university and was already helping build a multiple-story commercial building in La Paz. Betty, who had left her job at the municipality after Jerez's younger sister Hazel was born, kept the books for Mario's projects. Compared with many in Bolivia, they were doing okay. At first, the idea really was just a vacation. Mario's parents regularly visited his sister Eliana, who'd moved to the United States in 1994, had obtained citizenship, and now lived in Maryland. They could take the girls with them this time. Let Jerez and Jaciel practice their English. Mario and Betty applied for their daughter's visas. The request was easily granted. But even then, Betty was forming a backup plan. Famous for its jagged Andes and Quechua people in bowler hats and flounced skirts, Bolivia also held the distinction of being South America's poorest country. Social unrest had been creeping like a stubborn vine across the mountains in recent years, and now it was spreading its tendrils from the remote hills down to the streets. The government's efforts to eradicate coca farming in the late 1980s and 1990s, with help from the U.S. government, had left thousands of small farmers desperate and without any alternative sources of income. Then came the water wars. In 2000, mass protests swept Cochabamba, the nation's third largest city, after the government gave a private international consortium control of its water service. Bolivians were outraged that a U.S.-based group had come to control what they viewed as a basic public good. When price hikes quickly followed, it was too much. Protests followed, and the unrest spread, leading to food shortages in other cities. By the spring of 2001, the unrest found its way to Betty and Mario in La Paz. Activists began demonstrating in the streets against similar water privatization. Thousands of miners planted themselves in the heart of the city, demanding the government help revive their industry. They set off explosions at a courthouse and marched toward the Congress. Mario and Betty lay awake at night. If they waited until total chaos hit, they would be among thousands seeking to escape. They could try to get a U.S. residency visa by entering the American government lottery, which allotted
sample complete. Ready to continue?